Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 237 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder. You can subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review if you're feeling generous. Those reviews, the five stars, and actually writing the review, that really helps when iTunes does the rankings for podcasts and all that. You can find us on audioboom.com as well. You can log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there and see my Thunder articles and all that stuff. normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. I'm on Tuesdays and Thursdays. There's going to be a special episode coming out at some point in the coming days. I don't know if it's going to be on Friday. I don't know if it's going to be Monday. Maybe another time next week. But there's going to be a special episode. It's not going to be purely a Thunder episode. Not going to blow the theme, but when it comes out, you'll see it. I'm sure some fans of who are fans of this niche topic are going to be really excited about it, and I think it'll be fun. I've got Michael Pina from Vice Sports. He's been on the podcast before, so longtime listeners of the podcast, I'm sure, already know who he is. You may already know who he is anyway, but Mike's a good friend, a former colleague, and we're just going to be talking about the Kyrie Irving, Isaiah Thomas trade. You know, there's not a ton of Thunder news. We already discussed Michael Winger going to the Clippers, which is something that Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN reported is now a final thing. So he's over at the Clippers now, and the Thunder now just have one assistant GM in Troy Weaver. But we already discussed that. That was me and John Hamm on Tuesday's podcast. You can go back, listen to that podcast if you want to. So I had Mike on. And we're just going to be talking Cavs, Celtics, and the makeup in the East, and the makeup of that trade, and kind of breaking down that trade and talking about it, because it's a major, major trade and a crazy thing in the league. And on August 24th, it's the number one thing we talk about. This wouldn't be a basketball podcast if we weren't talking about it. So not quite Thunder-centric today, but I think it's a fun one. Before we get to Mike, I just want to tell you guys for a quick second about SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just use SeatGeek to buy tickets to the Yankee game, to buy tickets to a concert. You can use it for any of that stuff. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. Enter the promo code LONBA. That's L-O like locked on. It used to be L-O Thunder. It's now L-O-N-B-A. Download the promo code L-O-N-B-A. That's the promo code L-O-N-B-A for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. A quick break, and then let's break down that trade with Mike.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
So I think we can all agree, a massive thank you to Michael Pina for coming on the podcast, and we're going to discuss the massive Ante Zizek trade, which went on yesterday. Huge deal. What did you think of the Celtics giving up upping the ante there?
I mean, I like that pun. You didn't slip that one by me. You know, when you add a 23rd overall pick who had like a 38 PER in his 10 minutes per game in the Turkish League last year, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that they included him in the deal, but you got to do what you got to do.
All right, so the actual trade was Kyrie Irving goes to the Celtics for, is it Zizek or Zizic?
Zizic.
Zizic. Okay.
Yes.
It was Kyrie Irving for Zizic and other pieces, which included Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and the Brooklyn Nets 2018 unprotected pick. First thing I want to talk about with this, obviously massive star swap and all that. First thing that I really want to talk to you about this, because I want to get your perspective, because you have Celtics connections and are soon you're going to be a New Yorker, but you're still a Bostonian for now and covered the Celtics this past year. All I heard for years from like 2013 on, so for the last 4 years, is how this 2018 Nets pick is an unbelievable pick. And that's all I heard up until August 22nd, 2017. Now that the Celtics have traded that pick, all I'm hearing is, hey, you know, the Nets are going to be pretty good this year. That pick isn't so good. What is going on? I feel like I am taking, I feel like Mugatu in the I'm Taking Crazy Pills scene right now. Like, the Nets are not going to be good.
Okay,
this is my rant. This is the thing that has been frustrating me all day, if you can't tell.
Okay, I wrote a thing about a month ago about why I thought that the Nets would actually be not a 20-game winner, as I think they won. I think they won 20 games last season and obviously got the number one pick, and they were the worst team in the league. I don't think they're going to be that bad this year. And more importantly, I think when you look around at the Eastern Conference, I think a lot of teams got dramatically worse, whether it be intentional or, you know, you had a situation where Jimmy Butler leaves the Chicago Bulls. You have a situation where Paul George leaves the Indiana Pacers. You have the Atlanta Hawks. They lose Paul Millsap and, you know, dump everybody, trade Dwight Howard. So you have teams that are purposefully tanking. Carmelo Anthony is basically, he has one foot out the door in New York. That's another team. I think a lot of teams are going to take a serious step back. A lot of teams have motivation to lose games intentionally. The Brooklyn Nets, on the other hand, they added players. I know they lost Brook Lopez, who was a big part of their, you know, I won't use the word success, but he was their best player last year, and he spread the floor for their guards and made life easier for people. But, you know, they add D'Angelo Russell, they add Allen Crabbe, they add Damari Carroll. Jeremy Lin will be healthy. Like, we're not saying that this team is going to make the playoffs or compete for the eighth seed, but when I look at them, I don't necessarily think you can have the same expectations as you did heading into last season, where it was like, okay, the Nets are going to be the worst team in the league. Like, that's kind of what everybody
thought. I agree. But there is stuff coming out across my Twitter timeline that's like, the Nets could end up picking 11th in this one. It's like, yeah, no, they're not going to have the 11th pick. Like, I agree with you. Like, Chicago might be worse than the Nets this year. Phoenix might be worse than the Nets this year. Like, there are other teams that could have. I don't think the Nets are going to win the fewest amount of games in the NBA. And that's not my point. But that pick is a tremendous asset to be moved unprotected. Like, that is a fantastic pick. And I think seeing people just casually dropping, oh, the Nets could easily just have, like, the 11th pick this year, and it's not that good of an asset. That's crazy. That's an extraordinary situation if the Nets end up winning 35 games and get the 11th, and that pick ends up being 11th.
No, I don't think anyone who's rational will say that they're competing for the 11th pick, but I could see them being closer to the 10th than the first. So like the 6, 7, 8 range, I could totally see that happening. Especially when you get late in the season, when like they're going to really be trying to win games and build their culture and establish an identity, while teams left and right will be benching their best players. There will be after the trade deadline, teams will be aggressively looking to unload their top talent. So, I mean, I just think that will not be a top three pick. I would not be, you know, surprised if it was a top three pick, but I'm not really projecting it to be. And in speaking with people around the Celtics and in their front office throughout the summer, you know, even heading into last year, I thought that they thought that if Jeremy Lin, they thought Jeremy Lin was going to have a big season for the Nets and potentially, you know, again, not make them a playoff team, but make them slightly demi-respectable, not a 20-game winning team. So when you have him coming back healthy, you have the other players that I've mentioned who, you know, are they're helpful pieces who can space the floor. They do things that kind of fit in the modern game. I think, like, you know, this pick is valuable, but it's not the most valuable asset in basketball, which is what I think it was viewed as, you know, a couple of years ago.
All right. You want to talk about this is leave it to my podcast. Leave it to my podcast to have you on. You've done what, 4 podcasts today?
This is number 4, Fred.
Have you led any others? Have you led any others discussing the Brooklyn Nets in this trade?
No, you're first. You're an original.
There we go. That's what I'm here for. That's why I cover the Thunder. That's why I'm here to talk about a Cavs. I'm here to talk about the Nets when we're discussing a Cavs Celtics trade on a Thunder podcast. That's exactly why I do this. But this is the talk of the league. This is a huge deal. This went down August 22nd. Isn't that the same day the Andrew Wiggins trade went down too? August 22nd.
Potentially, you know, I think the deal was consummated because it was the first day that they were allowed to trade Zizic as a rookie. I'm not 100% positive on that, but, yeah, I think Wiggins wears number 22. Maybe that's where the confusion comes in.
Wiggins was traded August 23rd. So close. So close. Well, because the holdup was they were going to trade Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love, and they had to wait because the Cavs had already signed Wiggins to his rookie deal, and you have to wait 30 days after signing a deal, a rookie deal for a guy to be eligible to be traded against. So he signed on, what was it, July 24th, and I guess he got traded on August 23rd. And there's your deal. We haven't even discussed Kyrie Irving or Isaiah Thomas or Jay Crowder. What'd you think of the trade? What did you think? Who tell me exactly who won this trade, and don't you dare be wrong. Because if you're wrong, you're never coming back here.
I'm still like in a state of shock, to be honest, with this. Like I wrote a 1500 word column about it late last night. As we've just discussed, I've been on multiple podcasts to talk about it, and I'm still a little flabbergasted that this is happening. Like these two teams just played in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're like projected to meet. They were projected to meet again in the Conference Finals this upcoming season, had no deal been made. So it's just so ridiculous that the Celtics would trade their best player and the Cavaliers would trade their second best player, to each other. But when I look at this deal, it's a tricky one because I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to how you view Kyrie Irving. I think some people view him as a top 10 player, a top 15 player. I think some others look at him as a bit more one-dimensional, an exceptional skill set, but a one-dimensional one, whereas he's a minus on defense. He does not necessarily make teammates around him better. He is not so much of a playmaker. He is yet to prove that he can, you know, lift lesser talent around him in ways that guys like James Harden and Kawhi Leonard and Russell Westbrook have. So it's tricky because when we talk about the package that the Celtics gave up, like I always thought that they were holding on a package like that for a superstar, like a bona fide guy like those players that I just named. And for them to give it up for Kyrie, it's just, it's interesting. But again, I think the Celtics are obviously extremely high on Kyrie, his present and more importantly, his future.
So you're kind of getting at something that I know Jared Dubin tweeted this, and I think this is a really interesting observation, which is one thing that might be the most interesting part of this trade is that the Celtics not definitely, because there are certain ways which you can say this isn't the case, but in all likelihood, the Celtics valued Kyrie a lot more than they valued Jimmy Butler and a lot more than they valued Paul George. Now, granted, Kyrie's got the extra year on his deal than Paul George does, and maybe they feel like they have a better chance of retaining Kyrie than they would have retaining Paul George when both those guys are becoming free agents, Kyrie in 2 years and Paul George in 1 year. So maybe that has something to do with it as well. But them valuing Kyrie that much more than those guys probably is, and there are certain ways with Paul George which could have, you know, been a little bit of a different type of situation with the way the Pacers wanted to operate and timing of the deal, and that the Celtics already have Hayward now and they wouldn't have at the time that Paul George was actually traded to the Thunder. And there are certain ways that could have ended up being different. But, like, they valued Kyrie a lot. And that kind of surprises me, because I'll be honest, I'm a little bit lower on Kyrie than the average person probably. I'm a little bit lower on Isaiah Thomas than the average person too, actually. Just because they're great offensive players. They're both fantastic offensive players, and I think they're kind of facsimiles of each other in a lot of ways. I think we could probably agree on that. But they're just defensively, it's just harder to live with those two guys. And I think Isaiah is actually a better passer. I think he's a better passer than Kyrie is, and he was more efficient than Kyrie was last year. Though Kyrie is, when Kyrie is trying, he's a superior defender than IT is. I thought that was a really intriguing part of the trade, that they must see something that Kyrie is capable of as a number one guy, as a number one option beyond what he's been doing in Cleveland, right?
Well, so going back to the Jimmy Butler thing, I don't necessarily agree there, because if you were to trade for Jimmy Butler, this would have been around the trade deadline last year. So it's really difficult to go back and look and see how the cap space would have been figured out. But what they wanted to do was keep that Nets pick in 2017, and they wanted to keep their cap space to get Gordon Hayward. And I don't know if they were to trade for Butler, and let's say they trade for Butler, and, you know, they still have enough space to offload enough salary to still have enough cap space that summer to sign Hayward. I don't know if Hayward is interested then in signing with the Celtics. So that pick, the 2017 Nets swap, was extremely valuable, because heading into the lottery, everyone kind of knew that the highest odds for the number one pick were belonging to Brooklyn. And we had that draft where it was, you know, Markelle Fultz and Tatum and Josh Jackson and Lonzo Ball, and it was a very star-studded class. So the Celtics wanted to keep that asset. They did. They ended up winning the lottery. They traded for Tatum and a future first-round pick from the Lakers or the Kings in 2018 or 2019. So if you were to trade for Butler, there's a chance where you would not have – not only would you not have Hayward, you'd still have Isaiah, and you'd have to deal with Isaiah's contract situation, which is a big part of why they wanted to get rid of him, I think. But you would also not have the 2017 pick, which gave you Jason Tatum. And I think that the Celtics view the 2018 Nets pick, which we talked about for about 45 minutes at the beginning of this podcast.
The guaranteed number one overall pick next year, you mean?
Yes, they don't view that asset necessarily the same, even though it's from the same organization. So I think they're two very different situations. That being said, they clearly value Kyrie Irving more than I would, and when I'm speaking about that, it's more like giving up Jay Crowder, who has been an integral part of their team for the past three seasons. They've been substantially better when he's on the floor than when he's off it, and his contract is phenomenal. So for them to give him up plus the Brooklyn pick plus their best player, it's a lot. It's a lot to give up.
Yeah, so Crowder, I'm glad you bring up Crowder, because he's a guy who hasn't really been – I don't think he's been fairly evaluated in this trade. Not by everyone, obviously by some people. And his contract, like you said, I mean, it's ridiculous. He makes $6.8 million next year. He makes $7.3 the year after that. He makes $7.8 the year after that. I mean, this is for a guy who is just the ideal role player in the modern NBA. I mean, he defends well. He defends multiple positions. He's good on the ball, off the ball. He shot the three extremely well. I think he shot 40% from three this year, right?
39.8, yep.
There you go. I'll call myself right on that. I mean, he shot on a high volume. It's not like the dude takes two threes a game. He takes 5-6 threes a game. He rebounds all right. He can play the three. He can play the four. He can switch on to guys. I mean, this is he's good without the ball. He can do something with the ball if you need him to on those, you know, occasional possessions or desperate situations where you need him to. It's not like he's a guy who's just – it's not like he's Kyle Korver where he gets the ball and all of a sudden it's like if he's not catch and shoot, you've completely limited him. That's not the case at all. I mean, this is a quality, one of the best role players on a really good team that you're going to have in the league right now. Now, I see a lot of people with the reaction of, well, you know what, if you're the Cavs, you got to be making moves for Golden State and for Golden State only. And I agree with that. And a lot of those people have had the reaction of, well, Golden State is just going to kill Isaiah Thomas. They're going to find a way to get Kevin Durant or Clay on Isaiah Thomas or whatever it is, or Durant's going to go to town on him or whatever the heck they're going to do. They're going to put him in pick and rolls when he has to guard Curry, and Curry's going to kill him in the finals next year or whatever it might be. And you know what? First of all, Isaiah Thomas is not that much worse of a defender than Kyrie Irving. Like, it's not like Kyrie Irving was this you know, all-world defender, and now all of a sudden they're dropping off to Isaiah Thomas. So I do think, while that is true that Isaiah's defense is going to be exploited in that series, assuming we get there, it's a little bit exaggerated. And second of all, if you're going to talk about the defensive drop-off at point guard with Isaiah Thomas, you got to talk about how valuable Crowder is going to be in that series, right? I mean, he is really, really valuable to defending a team like the Warriors, and he is really, really valuable offensively in spreading the floor against the defense like the Warriors. He is the perfect player that I would want going up against a series against a versatile offense and versatile defense that's as talented as that team, right?
100%. I mean, when you look at the way he fits, as you pointed out, in the modern game, I mean, he's ideal, and his contract is probably the best value contract, non-rookie, non-max in the league. So he's phenomenal. And when I talk about that Nets pick, bring it up once more. I mean, if you're the Cavaliers and you haven't really had any tradable assets these past few seasons, I mean, you traded a number one to get Kyle Korver last year. You know, since the J.R. Smith, Shumpert, Mozgov, Flurry, there really hasn't been too much trade activity just because they don't have any assets. And when you get, and you're a championship contender, a legitimate championship contender, and you have an asset like that, it'll be really interesting to see how aggressive they are dangling that on the trade market and attaching it to someone like Shumpert or Tristan Thompson or JR or even Kevin Love. So I'm really interested to see what they could potentially get back for that if they wanted to move it, which if I were them, and, you know, I'm a believer of, like, if you're close, if you can sniff the championship, you got to do whatever you can to get it, because if you keep it and, you know, it is the sixth or seventh pick and you get a guy who never makes an all-star team, that's a huge bummer. And LeBron is probably out the door. So you're screwed. I think looking at Crowder, his ability to match up well with the Warriors, them adding another wing type player in a deal with involving that Nets pick. And I mean, you're cooking.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. That next pick is probably more valuable to them as currency than it is as an actual draft pick. And let's not forget that, like, there is a certain possibility that Dwayne Wade, if not stronger than just the possibility that Dwayne Wade ends up on that team in some way by you know, the start of next year's playoffs, that Dwayne Wade is on the Cavaliers. I mean, that's an absolute possibility. So that's an addition that they can get independent of acquiring somebody big with that Nets pick also. Crowder also, I'm not totally convinced that Crowder is done improving, right? I mean, I feel like I shouldn't be. He's 26 years or 27 years old, but he's gotten better every single year really since coming to Boston. He got better every single year that he was at Marquette. He was a constant improver from year to year there. He came into the league basically as a non-factor his first couple of years. Started to really show off as like an okay player in Dallas, and then he got traded for Rondo and really became like a solid player for Boston, playing heavy minutes in the second half of that season. Was a legitimately good starter the following year, which I think a lot of people didn't expect. And then it was even better this past season. Like, he's getting better every single year. He's 27. He's a tremendously competitive guy who's really respected for work ethic and all those things. Maybe this is exactly who he is. And if he is, that's fine. It's still an incredible trade. He's not an all-star, but he's a very good, very valuable player. If he's not done improving though, if he still has other ways to get better, I'm not going to be so shocked by that. Would you?
Well, on one hand, you have him going to a situation where he will be beside, the point guard who set him up the past few years with Isaiah. They have fantastic continuity that they've spoke about multiple times during last season. And he's going to be teammates with probably the best passer, smartest player I've ever seen. So in that regard, I think context could help him. I think he might have shot his three-point percentage was just like way above his career average. And even the year before, when he was on pretty high volume, he was like a 33% three-point shooter. A little bit of that is thanks to a high ankle sprain he suffered towards the end of the year that really brought his percentage down. But all in all, I mean, I think he's pretty static, in my opinion. I think I would expect him to shoot, 37, 38% from deep for the next few seasons, at least through the life of this contract. I think he declined a little bit on the defensive end last season. His lateral quickness kind of fell off a little bit for whatever reason. But again, he's super valuable just because he can play the four. He can guard fours. He's a great pick and roll defender. He's a great communicator on the defensive end. Everyone who plays with him respects him. He has absolutely no creativity with the ball in his hands. He is straight right hand Latin drives to the basket. That's his move, and he does not deviate from it. And sometimes he'll draw a foul at the rim, and sometimes he won't. He's a convenient role player. And it wouldn't surprise me if, playing beside LeBron and in the space that team will have with Love, if he's still around, JR, Korver. I mean, he'll have a ton of space to operate too, which is fantastic. But I think you might be a tiny bit higher on him, organically improving. But he's still, it's like absurd just like him being in this deal and how much better he'll make Cleveland.
I agree with you that the shooting is going to come down. I don't think he's a 40% three-point shooter for his career. He's 35% for his career. Maybe he's a little bit better than 35%, when he gets to his prime, because guys can improve their shooting and get up there, and we've seen that countless times with different kinds of guys who have those kinds of work ethics throughout their career. But isn't there – I mean, the reason I say that is because, like you talk about, he's kind of got – I mean, to put it in perspective for Thunder fans who are listening to this, he's Jeremy Grant with the ball, right? Like, he can go to the rim, he can get to the rim, he can draw a foul every once in a while, but he doesn't have any moves. He doesn't really have anything that he's going to be able to do all that much with the ball, though. If you give it to him at the end of the shot clock, it's really not the worst thing in the world. It's not like he's, an incompetent guy with the ball or anything. There's just nothing there. I feel like there are certain like skills that he's going to be able to add, and as he becomes, more of a as the league becomes more of an even more outside league, which I think we're going to be seeing, I think a player like him defensively as well is going to be more valuable, which is going to, turn him into a more important player too. So I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do in Cleveland. Who do you think is better, Cleveland or Boston right now?
Cleveland, no question. I mean, this isn't even like an argument for me. I think that a big reason why the Celtics won 53 games last year and, have shown annual improvement is their continuity and their tenaciousness in the defensive end. When you're basically losing both those things, and the entire nucleus of this team is different. It's a brand new basketball team. They've added talent. they've upgraded in talent, and that's fantastic. They add Gordon Hayward, and they add Kyrie. They lose a lot of toughness, a lot of defensive-minded play, a lot of guys who kind of just understand their role and who complemented one another. So it'll be interesting. I think that this team, I think the Celtics get better in a playoff series format, in a seven-game series. I think their offense will be extremely difficult to defend for 24 seconds, 48 minutes, 24 seconds at a time. But like defensively, I think there's some question marks. I think a lot, there's a lot of, you know, responsibility that's going to fall on guys' shoulders like Jalen and Terry Rozier and Jason Tatum and Semi Ojeleye and these guys who have like little to no experience that are probably going to be in the rotation. So it's really difficult. And then when you look at the Cavs, you have, if Isaiah is healthy, like Isaiah is, I love him so much. Like I just looking at his numbers last year, he's just a freaking stud. And putting him next to LeBron, I don't expect him to average 30 a game again, but he's going to be phenomenal. He's going to be super efficient. He's an incredibly smart player. That team still has the spacing like no other team in the league minus Golden State, and they still have the best player in the league. So yeah, it's just, I anticipate another cakewalk for them to the finals, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm about in your camp, but it'll be fun. Opening night will be fun. Eastern Conference Finals, if it gets to be Cleveland-Boston, that'll be fun. And you know what? If LeBron ends up going to the Lakers in a year, then you got that rejuvenated Lakers-Celtics rivalry with him and Kyrie. You got it all. He's got everything.
No, I think if you're the Celtics, this season may not be the greatest experience in the world. It may be a slight letdown. But beyond that, I think the future, this move was more about the future. And, you know, the 2018-19 season, 2019-20, that's not what a lot of people want to hear around Boston. But when you have Kyrie being 25 years old, assuming you're able to re-sign him and have him through his prime, if he makes a leap when he's 28, 29 years old, and he's, you know, the best player at his position, which is conceivable, and you have Jalen and Jason Tatum and these other assets, and maybe you are able to, you know, swing a trade for Mr. Anthony Davis, then you're talking. Then you're by far the best team in the Eastern Conference, pending what happens with Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks or the Sixers, and seeing if Joel Embiid can stay healthy and Ben Simmons is a phenom. So, like, that's kind of what I think their mindset was with this move. I know they've kind of been towing two timelines for a little bit over these past couple of years, and I think with a trade like this, you kind of have really committed more so to the future.
Cool, man. What do you got to plug before we go? You did 78 other podcasts today, so listen to those. You've got your
Sure.
where can people find your work? Where can people follow you? All that stuff.
So my Twitter is Michael V. Pina. So if you want to follow me there, that's wonderful. I just wrote something about the Kyrie IT trade over at Vice Sports, and that's where all my work is. So, that about does it.
Yeah, so you can follow Mike there. Let's see, what else do we have? Is that it? Is that all? You gave your Twitter handle? The last two guests that I had, you're now the second guest in a row, which I zoned out while giving a Twitter handle. I don't know if you gave a Twitter handle or not.
I gave my Twitter handle, Fred.
Okay. This is captivating podcasting when even the host is like, no, I'm not listening anymore. I'm out of it. All right. Well, what you say what you're going to say? What are you saying?
I was going to say, I very much appreciate your attention.
Yeah. It's okay. I don't need to listen to you anymore. No one does. I'm on every Tuesday and Thursday. Follow me there. Head out to iTunes. Subscribe to Locked On Thunder. I'm going to be coming out with a special episode. It will have some basketball talk. It will also have non-basketball talk in it. I'm not sure if that's going to come out Friday or if it's going to come out Monday or another day next week, but look for that potentially on Friday afternoon coming out. It's going to be a special episode. It'll be a little bit non-basketball. It'll be a little bit niche. It's not going to replace an episode, but it'll be fun for people who are fans of this topic. So you'll see that coming out soon. You can head on to iTunes, though, subscribe there, leave a review once you're on there, too. 5 stars is always nice, and writing up the reviews really helps with the iTunes rankings as well if you have a couple minutes and you want to do that. Questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz, and you can log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road, that's my blog, and you can follow team coverage. What's next for the Thunder there? normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. That is going to do it for today. Mike, thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, sorry. I was just zoning out. I wasn't listening to what you were saying there.
That's okay. No one listens to this end part anyway, right? Who listens to this?
No, I don't.
Does anyone listen to the end? Once they get into the wrap-up stuff, it's like, end it. Done. That's it. All right. Yeah. Now I'm going to end it. It's going to be done. Until next time, Locked on Thunder is locking up.